Work shouldn't feel like a drag, and you shouldn't have to sacrifice your soul for a job you love. Determined to rethink the future of work, she's out of her depth on purpose. With fresh ideas, interviews, and stories from her life on the road, meet Europe's newest digital nomad, Blair Palmer.
Hello and welcome to episode 78 of A Brilliant Gamble. I hope you are really well. I'm recording this from Germany. We've been in Germany for a couple of days. We left Croatia about 3 days ago, headed across the Alps and camped in Austria, right in amongst the Alps. It was amazing. If you've had a look at any of the Instagram photos from that campsite, just impossible not to see a breathtaking view. 360 around the van. It was absolutely gorgeous. And then we carried on, stayed in a campsite just outside Munich, actually, then. This is the first time we've stayed so close to a big city. And it was brilliant because we could take the dogs on the public transport into the city and spend a few hours there with them. And they were really a hit. Humphrey in particular, people kept coming up to him and taking his photo. I don't think they'd seen a dog that looked quite as much like a bear, maybe ever. So he was very, very popular in Munich. We had a great time there. We're also getting really a lot better at packing up and unpacking. We got here yesterday and kind of unpacked as much as we need. We're only here for about a week, so we unpacked as much as we needed in about an hour, which must be some sort of new record. And today we've been to the supermarket, so we are set. It was really nice being back in the van, actually. We obviously have been in a house for a month, so having a couple of nights camping was great, being out in the fresh air. And actually being in Germany has been really great too. We've only been here for a couple of days, but we're both enjoying the change of scene after a month in one location and a bit more familiarity. You know, we're back to dealing in euros, brands we recognise at the supermarket. And I've been to Germany a few times over the years for client work, so I kind of know how the system works here. And that's a lot of the things I get into with today's guests. Tanya and Erin of F The Office are super, super, super people. They've been travelling and working for 4 years now, and they've started helping others to do the same. We actually met on Twitter. You know, you can meet people, you can actually make friends on Twitter. You can do that. And we've become big fans of each other ever since that. So if you're thinking of taking your business on the road with you, or simply trying to break away from the traditional office way of working, you'll get a lot from today's show. And if you want a few myths busted about what digital nomadery is really like, you'll enjoy this show today as well too. So settle back and enjoy the interview. Ladies, I'm so excited to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Oh, we're so good. Thank you so much for having us. We are so looking forward to this.
Yeah, thank you.
Me too. It's been in the diary and out of the diary. You had lost your voices and all kinds of stuff was going on.
Bad health.
It was, poor Tanya, it was really a solid 2 weeks of me asking her questions. And then I'd say, wait, never mind, don't answer that. So that is exactly what the whole entire 2 weeks of our lives.
I'm a teacher who couldn't talk for 2 weeks. That was torture.
Did you? Because your business, will come to what you guys do and how you live and all of that, but I mean your business requires you talking. How did you get around that?
Yeah, I didn't. I had to cancel my lessons for almost 2 full weeks. I could work on some social media stuff, but everything I do is about my accent, my voice, my this is my business. So it was a lovely wake-up call.
I will also say, watching Tanya deal with not having a voice and have to teach, like, she was pulling out some really innovative things that I was like, how can we do this for our own F The Office? Because she was thinking of way, like, how to do, how to record videos of her doing stuff on social media, how to put graphics to a video up on Instagram.
It was just creative.
Different ways to still communicate a language with people without actually having a voice. It was wild.
Well, we'll come to I'm interested in the health aspect because you mentioned that, and that there is something about the lifestyle of working remotely, not having maybe that routine that you can rely on where you know, this is when I get up, this is when I do my exercise, this is the food I eat, that can really put your health under a lot of pressure, can't it?
Well, we try to actually, and that's really great that you brought that up, because I think the biggest thing about this kind of traveling life is finding some routines that you can do anywhere. So even when our time zones shift, or even when we have to have like a full travel weekend, if we're crossing an ocean, we still have, we have our travel routines that help us feel like there's some consistency, and we have our daily routines. We just shift the times. So if you're flexible with the times, you can still maintain a semblance of home wherever you are.
Well, let's backtrack a bit, because we still haven't really explained how you guys, what you do, how you work, where you live. So maybe you can explain a bit about how your lifestyle works and what's a little bit different to maybe the more conventional home office kind of way of living of most people.
Yeah, sure. So Tanya and I both work online. And it really started years ago, 2015. We both had more traditional office jobs. And it wasn't until Tanya kind of threw out this bomb that was like, hey, do you want to try to work online and try moving overseas for a brief period of time just to see if we like it? And of course, there's a lot of work that goes into that. Do you want to just try to work online? But we were both able to find work online. So Tanya is an online educator, and I'm a virtual assistant.
And we do F the office on the side. So what a lot of people, I think, perceive is that we must be travel bloggers, or we do F the office and do consulting or anything. But that's actually all stuff we do for free. We don't monetize off of that yet. So we have full-time jobs teaching English and being a virtual assistant. And then our quote unquote side hustles, which is the new having a second job, is doing, you know, working on these different projects and working towards monetization. But yeah, our main source of income comes from working 40 hours a week doing one set thing.
But like you said, so after we got those jobs online, we both said, let's give it a go. You know, we were both living in the US at the time, and we said, let's try going to Spain. Spain, Barcelona was the first city we landed on. And we said, let's give ourselves a trial period and just see if we'd like it. So neither one of us had ever worked online before. We hadn't lived in that traditional sense overseas. And it ended up being this really wonderful experience that we dove into headfirst. We absolutely loved it.
In retrospect, in the moment. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. The first few months were rough. But in retrospect, now that we're really happy, it was a great adventure.
Rose-covered glasses.
Well, tell me about that, because people do imagine that, well, what's not to like, right? I mean, you leave your sort of traditional life, you're living in Barcelona, you're still able to do your work. Why would that be? What's hard about that?
You know, that's very true. That's very true. People do kind of get this like, oh, you must be at the beach every day and have such a wonderful life. Truthfully, the apartment that we moved into, it was through an Airbnb, and it was the size of somebody's closet. It was like being Harry Potter, which was totally unexpected.
So small.
I mean, my own mother came to visit, and she wouldn't go inside.
She's like, I'm getting vertigo.
So that was difficult to then take your whole life and move basically into this closet space where we're both working. kind of a fun tidbit, within the first 2 months that we were there, the company that I was working for closed overnight without any warning whatsoever. So our worst nightmare in all of this pre-planning was, you know, we'd move overseas, we'd sell all of our belongings in the US, and one of us would lose our employment. And that's exactly what happened. So it was worst case scenario.
So I feel like a lot of people tell you, oh, you know, plan for the worst, but it'll never happen. Our advice is the opposite. Plan for the worst, because at some point it will. And just be prepared for it. We've lived it. And the only reason we were able to continue is because we had planned for that. And we had enough to get us through, to work through it. But man, that was rough. But other than that, once you embrace kind of a more minimalistic life and you're okay with living in different kinds of apartments, like right now we don't have air conditioning for a summer apartment. And that's new for us. You know, I'm used to having cold air. So sometimes I'm sweating profusely as I'm working at my computer. So it's not always glamorous, but for us, it's worth it.
What is it that you love so much about it?
It's rejuvenating. You know, whenever we fall into a routine, it's fun instead of stifling, because we know this is our routine for 6 months. Oh, by the way, we move every 3 to 6 months, depending on legally how long we can stay. So for us, you know, falling into routines doesn't have the same connotation of boring or stale. That can sometimes happen if you're not happy in a certain lifestyle. And so for us, like, oh, this is great. This is our routine for 3 months. And then we hop on a plane and we have a different place to walk the dog or places to hang out.
And part of the fun is that it is a challenge. Every 3 to 6 months, you think, gosh, I have to learn an entirely new way of life. I have to figure out where the grocery stores are and how I get around, and is there a metro? And so there is a lot of preparation in that. And it's a challenge, I won't lie, but I like it. It's this kind of invigorating challenge where you're constantly inundated with new things and new cultures and new foods. And it's just, I guess, like Tanya said, there's nothing stifling about it.
Yeah, I actually really resonate with that, because we just left Croatia a few days ago and now we're in Germany. We're only here for a week. But I was getting to the point, and we were only in Croatia for a month, but you know, we had our supermarket that we liked and we had the beach that we liked. And there is something very joyful about finding the supermarket that you like and finding the place that you like.
That's our favorite part.
Yeah, that's great. But then you get to the point where you think, oh, not that beach again. And then it's kind of time to move. That sounds awful. But, oh, not that beach again. You know, I want a new beach.
First world problem. When we acknowledge the privilege of our life, for sure. But yeah, and sometimes you do feel that.
You do. So you get, there is a nice kind of shape to the move where everything's new and nerve-wracking and you don't know where anything is. You don't know how to order the food that you like. You don't know how to explain where you live or any of those things. And then you get into some routine and that feels really reassuring. But just before it gets boring, you move again.
Yes. Yep. Yes. There's never this dull moment. And I think people who don't yet, whether they don't want to kind of live this digital nomad life or they haven't started yet, I think they can relate to that. Because even thinking back on your own life when you're somewhat more permanent, like when I first moved to New Orleans in 2009, when I first got there, everything was new and shiny and exciting. And, you know, a year into living there, you have a job, you have your routine, you have your friends. And all of a sudden, you don't see the city like you once did. It's almost like it's not even there. So really living this life, for us at least, is just a way to bypass that.
Keeps it fresh.
Yeah. I'm reminded of, there's an advert in the UK, I don't know if they have it elsewhere, for an air freshener that changes the scent between 3 different scents every few hours, because they say you go nose blind.
Yeah.
You go kind of city blind. You can't see your environment anymore, so you have to change it, and then you see it all again.
Oh, I love that. City blind. Yes. I feel like you just coined a new phrase.
We're the Febreze of traveling.
So one of the things that I'm trying to do is to reinvent the 9-to-5, but in a way, you aren't reinventing the 9-to-5. You're still working proper hours. It's just that you're sort of reinventing the office environment, I guess. That's the bit that you're ditching.
Yes. In fact, for myself personally, as a virtual assistant, part of my appeal, I think, and why my clients don't really care wherever I am, is because I guarantee to them that I'm available between their 9-to-5 working hours. And which is great for them, because we could be in China for all they care. And, you know, I oftentimes don't even tell them where we are, just as long as I'm...
Their 9-to-5, not your 9-to-5.
Yes. Yes. So it's this whole other twist on a 9-to-5. I don't even have my own time zone 9-to-5. I am matched. All my clients live in California, so I match their West Coast hours. And in that sense, I'm still tethered to a 9-to-5. Which again makes it really rejuvenating to be able to hop around to different cities and feel like there's always something new and fresh and exciting.
The pro of that is that you have a clear start and end time. So I think a lot of people feel overwhelmed sometimes thinking, but like, I don't know how to set my own hours, or maybe like a lack of self-discipline, because it's hard to do it if you don't have set time. So that's kind of a nice way to think of, just because you're a digital nomad doesn't mean you're living this structureless life. You can, if that floats your boat, but that's kind of another option. For me, I could teach around the clock. Like, it doesn't matter with the way I work, But since we travel together, I match her hours. So it helps us have the same schedule no matter where we are, and it facilitates the same thing, because if I know I start and end at a certain time, then we can work on our other projects. And we know, okay, 2 hours before work, we work on the office, and then it helps us multitask.
And how do you then make the most of the environment that you're in? Because there's a danger, isn't there, that you're in a new country or a new town, but you're working all the time, so you don't get a chance to experience it.
Actually, the best part is, because we're not on the West Coast time zone, for example, we're in Europe, we don't start until, I think, 6 p.m. So we start at 6 p.m., which means when we wake up at 10 a.m., we have hours where we get to go Monday through Friday and walk around Paris. That was amazing. So even though we worked a full-time job, we were able to take advantage of the city in a way that we couldn't have if we lived there and worked from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. So a lot of times it works to our advantage.
And, you know, like anything, it changes. I'm thinking of our time. We were in South America a year ago. And at that point, I was only, I say, two hours ahead of my clients. I'm world away, but I'm 2 hours time zone wise ahead. And it just forced us to find a different routine for that particular time in our life. And so at that point, we both made the effort to wake up earlier, to actually experience a morning walk with the dog, a cup of coffee, have some time to decompress before jumping into work. And it's those moments that I just hold so near and dear to me. Because you're absolutely right that you can get in this habit of working around the clock, especially when you work for yourself or you don't kind of have that office environment to say, you know, it's 6 p.m., it's time to pack up, we're closing the doors, go home. There's nobody there to tell you when to stop. So it's definitely a danger.
And think about it, like what we would experience in that city if we went for a weekend. It's like that whole checklist of like, I got to see this, this, and that. We get to do it over 3 months. So we do it slower. We usually don't rush around. So it's just a different way of embracing travel.
I think that's what a lot of people don't understand. And even my daughter doesn't quite understand this, that we're not traveling like we do when we're on holiday. So there are whole days, whole weeks where we're just at home. I mean, today we went out to the supermarket and we had to go to a pet shop. That was our excursion, you know. Yeah. The
it's
rest
so
of the day, we're at home. We're working. We're doing some school stuff. We're watching Netflix. We're addicted to Musical.ly at the moment. So we're doing a lot of that. So it's just like a normal life. And I wonder if even the Airbnb hosts don't quite understand, in a way, why you're home all the time.
They definitely don't.
What do you mean you don't go out and do it? Like, no, we just hang out with our dog and go for walks. And
oh, no, we've had hosts before who have popped in or checked in with us, and they'd say, have you seen XYZ, whatever big thing is in the city? We'll say, no, not yet. You know, we'll do something next week, or, you know, at the end of the month when the weather's nicer. And to them, they're just like, what? Like, you haven't gone to the Eiffel Tower yet? We're like,
no. Well, they all think we're on vacation. I feel like it's hard to wrap their mind around that, like, we work all day long every day. So it's just different.
That does bring me to something I wanted to talk to you guys about, which is the misconceptions. Mm-hmm. And the first one being, I guess, that it's a sort of prolonged holiday.
Oh my gosh,
something that
yes.
Or think when they learn about what you're doing?
People think we either secretly won the lottery and we just don't want to share, or that we are on some kind of vacation. But the thing that startles everyone the most is, since we started, we haven't taken a proper vacation in almost 4 years. We actually have our first vacation coming up. We have a big family vacation next summer. And we're both like nervous, like, oh my gosh, we're going to leave our laptops? We're really, like, I've worked Christmas morning and then gone with the family and then taught a class at night again. So we really do hustle all the time, but we love it. So it's not the same, like, I have to work overtime. So the vibe is different. But yes, we're not on permanent vacation. It is a luxurious life. I love it, but it's not, I'm not Mariah Carey going all over the world, you know? We're doing it differently, but no vacation.
It's why whenever you see those pictures of a laptop on a sandy beach,
I don't know how they do that.
I see those either on Instagram or even in the media. You'll see an article in Bloomberg about digital nomads, and I think, nobody does that. Nobody.
You can't see your laptop.
Exactly, and it gets overheated.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting sand in a $2,000 laptop.
It is much more mundane in a way than that. And yet, if it were really mundane, we wouldn't be doing it. There's definitely the open the door and you're in a different country, and that is in your face all the time, which is a great thing. You can't avoid it really, which is wonderful.
Yeah. But like you said, I think a common misconception, we're not on vacation. It really is just like your life at home. We haven't changed our routines drastically. When we were living permanently in the US, I woke up every morning and had a coffee, read some blogs, took the dog for a walk. And for the most part, any country we're in, I wake up, I have a cup of coffee, I read my blogs, and I take the dog for a walk.
So. But our dog walks are in an exciting new city every few months. So for us, we appreciate the little things, having a new neighborhood to get to know when we take the dog out for a walk. So it's like the mundane with something exciting.
What are some of the other misconceptions that people have about your lifestyle?
Oh, goodness. I think the biggest ones are those two, that we either won the lottery or that we're on some permanent vacation.
Another one we get a lot, which is surprising, is we get asked if our families help us financially, which I think is...
Everybody thinks our parents pay for us. I'm like, first of all, we're in our 30s. No. Number two, we make our own... I think that either they... Yeah, there's this notion of like you must be privileged or struggling or being helped. Like there's no way you can make ends meet traveling as much as you do.
That's true. In fact, I had a coffee with a family friend in Argentina years ago, and I was going, these are friends of the family. I wanted to treat them because they came out of their way to see me. And at the end, when I went to go pay for the bill, they said to me, well, we know that you're struggling, so we'll get this. And I said, So it's just a bizarre misconception that if you're either a virtual assistant or you're an online educator or you're traveling so much that all your funds just must be stretched to the limit.
You're either a lottery winner or broke. There's no in between. I feel like people don't assume that, you have your finances together, you are like rocking it.
And I don't know if you feel the same way, but I think part of this misconception is being a woman. A lot of people think that digital nomads are single young men. And along that vein of thought, a lot of people think that you have to be 20 years old to be a digital nomad. They think it's a young person's game. And in fact, we found the exact opposite.
Yeah. I wonder if also what's running through their mind is the scenario that would have to exist for them to do it. So they assume, well, if I was going to do it, it would either be because I'd won the lottery or because someone else was paying for it. If I was doing it, the biggest risk would be that I'd be sacrificing my financial stability and I'd come back when this whole crazy adventure was over to nothing. And so they maybe bring, and I'm being quite judgmental. I think I'm sounding quite judgmental. All the reasons I didn't do it for years. So, I really get it. I remember sitting there looking at the photos and thinking, blooming Instagram, looking at the photos and thinking, well, it's all right for them, but I can't do it because I'm a mum, because I'm a single mum, because I run a business, because our overheads are gigantic. We've got these two dogs. What would we do? So they're all the limitations that I brought to it for years are exactly the same limitations that I think come up for people when they look at me now and look at you now.
Yes. Very empathetic.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's a very good point. And in fact, we definitely had a moment too of, we have a dog. What do we do with him? Is this going to work? Do we put a time frame on how long we travel for? So maybe we as people have a tendency to limit ourselves before we even really get going.
Actually, that reminds me of something that you said before, which is that people sometimes say to you, when are you going to settle down?
Yes, always. Nobody thinks this is, and understandably, but they just don't see it as being a sustainable lifestyle.
our own families constantly ask us that.
Every year, every time we go back home. So when are you coming back? When are you settling down? I'm like, we're not on some like eternal bachelorette party. We're having, you know, we're creating this, you know, really sustainable, interesting life for ourselves. So
it's also nice to get away from that notion of you have to settle down. And I can't say I've met these people, but on social media, I've seen people who in group forums reach out and say, I'm thinking about traveling. Can you give me some advice? And a lot of people come to it saying, I'm going to give myself a year and then I'm going to go home and buy a house. And I think, why limit yourself? So I do think that's a popular misconception, is that this is not a lifetime of travel. This is just a get your kicks for 1 year or 5 years. And once you get tired of the lifestyle, you go home. And I don't really have a notion of home anymore. Home is wherever we are at the moment.
That's a really interesting idea, isn't it? Because home for so many people is a place, but it can't really be a place when you're moving frequently. So for you, is it each other? Is it something about your routine? Is it the dog? What makes a place home?
That's a great question.
For me, it's wherever the three of us are together, the little pups and us two, and that's it. We, over the years, we've realized that being a minimalist while traveling is much easier. So everything we own fits in our two little carry-ons, and it becomes a very sustainable lifestyle. You know, when you don't have a lot of stuff, you don't spend a lot of money, so you save a lot of money. And I think a lot of people also think if you're a digital nomad, you're just throwing money out and you can't save and invest and do all these other great financial things. But if anything, I think you're more empowered to do it, because you really can't buy a lot of stuff when it has to fit in a little box.
Yeah, true. I don't know how you're doing it with two carry-ons.
It's so fun.
Oh, I won't lie. It took us a long time to pare down enough to say our whole life now fits in these two suitcases. And the kind of stupid thing about this is we went so extreme recently that when we got to our next destination, I think it was in Paris, we realized we each had like two t-shirts and a pair of pants. We were like, oh, we went too far. So like, there is an extreme and we
go buy one more shirt.
Yeah.
I actually have, this might be too much information, but I have a lot of underwear. And one of the reasons is it's really hard to find a place to do laundry. So we try to get Airbnbs that have washing machines, but we don't always manage it. Or they're not, this one's not plumbed in this house we've just discovered. So the washing machine is full, but I can't actually do alone. So I just need a lot of knickers to get through those sorts of emergencies.
I love this so much. If you could see the smile on my face, I also have a lot of underwear. So you're welcome, Podcast Nation.
Yeah, that's the one thing you have to have enough for.
That's right. Everything else you can wear, you know, inside out and back to front, but the underwear thing you've got to take care of. So tell me a bit more about the actual process, because I know that F the Office is about helping other people to work remotely and to shake up their lives a bit, to design it the way they want to design it. And lots of people that listen to this show are curious about doing that themselves. So someone who hasn't made any decisions yet, but they're thinking, I want to change it. I want to maybe hit the road, maybe take my business on the road with me. How in the first instance do they actually make the final decision to go? Because that committing to actually doing it has to happen first before you start making logistical arrangements and all of that.
Very true. In fact, the commitment is often the hardest part. It's so easy to be wishy-washy about it. But once you make that commitment and you're in it to win it, you're forced to make these decisions that will affect the rest of your life.
So I would say the first thing you want to do is, number one, realize it's not going to be overnight. It took us about 6 months from thought to execution to plan for it. So know that, like, okay, yeah, I have time. Mm-hmm. And number two, that there are different ways to do it. I would say there are about a handful of ways. Number one, if you are happily employed, don't think that you have to quit to do this kind of lifestyle. I have a lot of friends who just approached their employers and said, can I work remotely? And if that they allow it, you actually could be a digital nomad and continue to work for the same company that you're with and still have the benefits that you have. So that's one way. And then another way is thinking, a lot of people, I think, have a notion of they have to do their own business entity, and that becomes overwhelming. So you can go for the LLC route and build your own business if you're comfortable with that. But the other way to do it is to do it as a freelancer. For example, she does freelancing and has different clients. I do freelancing, but I work for a bigger company. So even though I'm a freelancer, I don't have to worry about finding my clients because I am under their umbrella. So there are different ways to do it for different kind of business mindsets, whether you're super experienced or you're not. So I would say the first step is, number one, make time to prepare. And number two, really look into your choices and find what suits you best. Not everyone is an entrepreneur, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you say 6 months, because for some people that might feel quite quick. Is there a danger that you can spend too long preparing?
You know what? It depends on how, on what you envision. I read an article about another couple who travels like we do, and he actually set up, he had a long-term plan, and he developed his client base for 7 years in order to be able to do the lifestyle that they have. And because of that, he has high-end clients making real, you know, making a nice amount, but it took him 7 years because of the industry he was in. So it could, it's up to you. Some people decide, I'm going to quit and leave tomorrow and see what my bank account can do. So it really depends on, yeah, be flexible. For us, 6 months was enough. For somebody else, it might be too, like you said, too fast or too slow.
And I think that's the beauty of this community, this traveling and working community, is that everybody is so diverse and everybody's come to this through a very different and unique path. And I think that's the thing that I love the most about it, is there's no right way to do this. And so for somebody who feels like 6 months is too long, you know, really look at your path and what works for you and what makes financial sense for you. And once you've committed to your own timeline, stick to it.
Yeah. And I also really like what you're saying about doing this in the way that works for you. I think it's right that a lot of people would think, well, I have to not only leave the security of the place where I live, but also start a business from scratch. Mm-hmm. Now, again,
that's hard.
Yeah, I mean, people can do it however they like, but that feels mm-hmm. not only just risky, but a lot of stress. And one of the things that I noticed the first few months that we were traveling was that there's enough stress in just the travel, just getting used to that without adding into it. I've also got a brand new business that's got to start making money for me in the next 6 months. Otherwise, you know, we're really in big trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes I wonder if it's that kind of mentality of I have to do it one way, if that's what sets people up for failure.
And like, we're setting ourselves up to have our own, like we want to branch out with FE Office. I want to do other projects with English. However, I know that if we quit our jobs right now and dedicated ourselves full time to that, we wouldn't see a return on that investment for another year or two. We can't afford 2 years without income. So another thing is be open-minded about working two jobs, one that pays now and pays for your lifestyle, and one that will pay in the end, you know, in the future, and allow you to change your lifestyle.
So would you say that getting the work side of it sorted and the financial side of it sorted is the number one priority?
Definitely. Yes. Yes, especially for us. And I constantly go back to this story of when we first started traveling and the company I was with went under.
That was so bad.
had we not, yeah, I sat frozen on the couch for probably a full 24 hours out of just pure fear. Had we not had that financial buffer, had we not planned for that cushion, I don't know that we would have been able to continue. So I definitely say that having that emergency fund, having your finances in order, and having a plan and a backup plan is the most essential part, because everything else falls into place. You know, the rest of it, like where do you want to travel? How long can you stay there for? The little minutiae of the travel details will fall into place if you are stable.
And you hit the nail on the head. Traveling and changing your lifestyle is stress enough. For me, I don't deal well with financial stress. And the fact that we're a married couple traveling, money can, you know, absolutely can stress out a couple's relationship. And that's not something I wanted on the table. For me, I feel the most creative when I don't have to worry where my dinner is coming from. So personally, I just wanted to make sure that I was always able to be open to opportunity. When that happened in Barcelona and the company ended, instead of jumping into something she didn't like, we had the luxury of saying, you know what, take a couple of months, to find clients that you're passionate about working with, and let's set this next phase up right. And that's something that allowed the next 3 years to be a lot more comfortable than if she had to jump in with people she hated or go to work for a different company. So to me, that makes a huge difference.
That makes me think about the fact that, you know, that could happen at home too. So
exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, and when you imagine it happening at home, I mean, it can freak you out, you know, and a lot of people worry about losing their job and what the financial consequences mm-hmm. of that would be. But when and if it does happen, people address that at the time and they work out what they're going to do about it and they come up with a plan. And that's no different when you're traveling. And I wonder if sometimes when people are thinking about this, they think, well, I have to know exactly how the next 2 or 3 years of this travel adventure or remote working adventure is going to look before I start. And actually, you wouldn't know that amount about your life at home. So why would you expect to have that amount of security about travel life?
You are absolutely right. And Tanya used to remind me of that exact same fact. Because before we even started traveling, I did have this notion in the back of my mind that my full-time employment was more secure. And you're right, had we not gone to Barcelona, I would have lost my job regardless.
Yeah, it was gonna happen.
You're absolutely right.
And it's a perceived stability. I think people perceive being geographically static as stable, and you don't realize or you don't make the connection that any bad thing that can happen, health-wise, money-wise, job-wise, can happen whether you're traveling or not. And you're going to have to be faced with the same decision. If you lose your job, you either stop working and cry about it, and then you fall into financial ruin, whether you're traveling or not, or you go out there, hustle, get more jobs until you find something better. It's the same thing if you're virtual.
And what do you do then? So let's say that you've got a financial plan, you've got a kind of professional plan in place, and you're thinking, am I ready now to go? Is there anything else to think about before you go that would be universal, really, for anybody?
Really for anybody, another aspect is legally how long you can stay in a certain place. I think that's
your research.
Huge component, yes, because different passport holders from around the world have different parameters for how long they can stay in certain countries or whether you need a visa to visit a certain place. And before we started our adventure, we were not really aware that there was a thing, even like the Schengen zone in Europe. Had no clue that we, as American passport holders, could be in, you know, most of the Schengen zone for 3 months, and then we'd have to leave for 3 months. We just didn't realize that was a thing. So I do think it's crucial to research, if you have a destination in mind, how long you can stay there for. Do you want to maximize that time? Do you need a visa to stay, or can you go under this kind of travel visa? Even things like how expensive are the groceries there? Like these are all crucial things for you to know before you go.
And the answers are there. You can Google it. A lot of people have written about it. Call your embassy in the country that you're planning to visit.
Yes.
You know, go straight to, it's a serious legal issue to get deported from somewhere. So you want to make sure that you're doing everything exactly. Now, a lot of people that we've seen on social media tend to portray it as just winging it. And if that works for them, that's fine. But for us, we have a dog. Like, I don't want to travel somewhere, or even if we didn't have a dog, I don't want to travel somewhere and get kicked out and go through the hassle or don't like that kind of high risk, especially if you have a language or cultural barrier. So for me, I would say do your research and then do more research.
And then what? So the money's in place. You know where you're allowed to go and how long you're allowed to go for. Are you ready to go?
Yeah, go. You're ready. And you might laugh at this. We have a spreadsheet. People, our friends laugh at us. We have a very detailed, like 10-page spreadsheet of things like weather, prices of groceries, where we, you know, it's just when we're looking for our next city to travel to, we always look at, like, is the weather nice? Are we going to be freezing, which we hate? Are we going to be dying with the heat, which we also don't like? So where can we go that's just moderate weather, where we as two women who are traveling can feel safe? I think that's a big thing, researching where you can walk down the street safely where we're also married. So countries who are welcoming to gay couples is a big thing. So I think, again, this kind of lifestyle is all about you and your priorities and your preferences. So once you're ready to go, find a place that speaks to you, where you're going to be safe, where you know you'll be happy.
And go. Don't deliberate so long that you talk yourself out of it. You know, if we would have talked about it more or worried about it more, maybe we wouldn't have made the jump. But make your list, and once you do your checklist, allow yourself to move and go. Empower yourself to, like, get on that plane.
It resonates again so much with me, because what I've learned, and we've only been, I mean, I think this is our fourth month, so we're really early on in the trip in a way, but actually our requirements have become more and more specific. So yes. I'm seeing, I was just, well, as long as the place has got, I don't know, like electricity, we'll be fine. Now, I'm only staying in Airbnbs that are hosted by superhosts. Mm-hmm. And I want there to be a dedicated workspace, and I need an enclosed garden, and I need faster than average Wi-Fi.
Oh, yes.
The list is actually getting longer and longer the more we travel. I thought we would become more and more laid back, but actually the opposite is true.
I find the same thing.
I'm so glad you said that. Yes, it hadn't even occurred to me, but we're the exact same way. Our first one was, you know, space doesn't matter. But it turns out living in a closet without windows really affects your psyche.
So. That was marriage boot camp.
So yes, and our list, just like you said, has really grown. You know, we want super hosts. We want
windows
with natural light. We want a washing machine. It's these little luxuries.
Talk to me about some of the, we talked earlier about misconceptions and now some of the practical steps. You've mentioned about being a couple and being women. So one of the things that I thought at first is, well, I can't do it because I kind of need a guy to be with me. And that's not from a sort of romantic perspective, just what if the van breaks down? What if I need to lift heavy stuff? What if we feel unsafe? And when you look at a lot of the stories on the social media, which is obviously quite dangerous to do, you know, it's nice to have some guy around keeping you safe. That was not going to be an option for me, and it's not an option for you. So are there any, again, limitations that people put on where they think to themselves, well, I couldn't do that because I can't do it because we're two women traveling together. I can't do it because I'm a single mom. I can't do it because I'm too old. Can't do it because I've got dogs. Are there any valid can't do this?
Oh, valid ones. Okay.
I'm thinking.
I know, like, what are some valid ones? To be honest, I don't think there are a lot of valid arguments, because a lot of the arguments, especially the ones that you presented, which are the most common ones for sure, are, again, misperceptions. Like, I think if you assume that if you have a male with you, but the male that you're envisioning is strong enough to lift the car or savvy enough to do whatever. Not all dudes come with, like, this, like, macho kid of, like, I can change a tire or whatever. You know, like, it's this assumption that they're going to know everything you don't. And really, you have YouTube. Anything we've needed to do that's handy or stereotypically something that you might envision needing a guy to do, YouTube teaches it to you.
It's true.
Your own plumbing. You get your own stuff fixed. You call someone for help if you need it.
It's true. And, yeah, it's empowering, really.
Yeah.
Because you're no longer limited by this, I need somebody to do this for me. It's all on you. And I also find that people around the globe are incredibly helpful. And I think it's something that maybe is not talked about enough, is that if you need help, help is there to be found. So just don't be afraid to ask. If you feel like you're over your head or you need help, ask your Airbnb host. Or if you're not with an Airbnb, ask your neighbor.
And I'll be honest, Instagram has been awesome for us, because we've met other travelers that we happen to see are in the same city. And a lot of the people that we've met are single female travelers. Mm. So what I would encourage you to do, whatever you are, whatever, like, box you qualify, go look for similar people who are doing what you want to do on Instagram. Reach out to them and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing this, and this is my fear. How did you address it? So then you get, like, really niche about your approach and research. If you're a single female that wants to go to Africa for 2 years, go look at people who are traveling there and ask them. People are so nice and forthcoming about it.
It all goes back to research.
And I think maybe community. I think what you're touching on there is, you know, that you're not alone. And I wonder if the isolation is part of the fear and part of the reality. I mean, I talk to my VA a lot, and I think one of the reasons is that I miss adult company. So I'm talking her ear off and she's saying, this is great, Blair, but you know, my husband needs me
billable
to
hours.
So, you know, what ways are there to make sure that you are connected, that you're part of a community, that you don't get too isolated?
For the first thing is to acknowledge that you can be isolated at home doing a traditional life as well. Anytime you're working from a computer, it's an isolating nature. So whether you're doing it in a white picket fence house, you know, in whatever, Kansas, or you're traveling all over the world, it takes effort. And that's something that was rough for us at first. Even though we traveled together, you still want that sense of community. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. And but the beauty of doing this now, and I really thank social media for this, is that you have so many different channels and opportunities to connect with people. So in certain cities, we've looked up meetup.com. In smaller cities where maybe Meetup doesn't exist, we've turned to Instagram and have actually met a lot of long-lasting friends from just people who happen to be passing through at the same time. And or even when we were in Paris, there were several times that we walked to a cafe or a Starbucks to do some work. And I ended up chatting with people sitting next to me because they were interested in the website I was working on or ebook that I was writing. And it was this really cool moment where you just have this sense of community with you wherever you go. I think part of that is being open-minded, of course, because you can certainly sit at a cafe and put your blinders on and ignore everybody. But when you're traveling, I don't know, maybe you need a little more of a open mindset where you're willing to meet new people
and
constantly.
There are two different ways. I would say if you are the kind of person that you know you need in-person connection.
Which I do.
And I don't. To me, I'm fine with like virtually. So we're very different personalities. So if you like in-person connection, there are a couple ways to do it. Go become a regular at a cafe and don't just stare at your computer. You know, get to know the people there. Become a regular at an establishment that are the kind of people you want to hang out with. Do meetup.com. Find different communities. For me, I just like virtual connections and I'm fine with that. And a big thing would be FaceTime with your family more. We've got Skype. We've got FaceTime. Have those connections. The power of seeing your friend for a 20-minute conversation, a 5-minute conversation is so beautiful. And like you just come out of that conversation thinking like, okay, check. I've satisfied that connection that maybe you didn't know you needed. And also there are so many communities. We have FB Office. We talk with our followers. Find communities of like-minded people online. There are so many like Twitter hangouts and you've got things on Instagram where people are live. It's awesome.
Well, and it's like meeting you too.
Yeah.
Meeting you through Twitter has been kind of this glorious burgeoning relationship. And it's been a lot of fun. So there's definitely something to meeting people virtually. Because if you think about it, I don't know that our lives have ever have crossed otherwise.
Isn't that great? Because I feel the same. I never thought that could happen with something like Twitter. It just... When you don't need it for that reason, it doesn't do that for you. It's just a kind of stream of information flooding into your brain. When you actually are looking to connect and to find like-minded people, then it's there for you. It can be used for that as well. And I guess that's one of the reasons that you have the Facebook page is to start to create this sense of community. And you have a book club, don't you, that people can get involved with?
Yeah, it's so much fun. So we love reading business books and we thought, gosh, I wonder if it gets a little boring sometimes or we just like that camaraderie. And so we're like, let's put it online. And it's really fun. You just get together and chat about whether it's the book or a conversation inspired by the book.
And part of that too is our hope was not only to help ourselves and adopt some of these practices that we're reading, but help other people. Our whole thing at FD Office is to help others work online, feel empowered, be the best kind of virtual freelancer that they can be
and not feel lonely because you said it, it's so easy to get caught up in your work and then you realize, oh, I haven't talked to another human being in 7 days. But when you have these online communities where you, when you hop on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, you're like, oh, there's my buddy. It's like a virtual friend. Like when you post something, I'm like, oh my God, amazing. And it's a moment of connection that feeds your soul. And then it helps you be a better whatever you are.
So what else can people find on the FE Office Facebook group, Facebook page?
Well, Saturdays we do book club meetings where we talk about what we're reading. Right now we just got into Mel Robbins' 5-second rule. Obsessed with it.
Have you read that one before?
I don't know it.
Oh my gosh. It seems like the most simple rule you've ever heard. You maybe this is good too, talking about, are you ready to travel and take that jump? The whole theory of the book is you give yourself 5 seconds of delay and that's it. And then you go and you make a commitment. So the theory is if something stresses you out, we'll deliberate on it until we don't do it. The book says if something stresses you out, like the notion of packing up and moving abroad, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go and just commit. And I'm telling you, this book, we're only in the first few chapters, is life changing.
We have the audiobook and we're listening to it while we work. And every now and then we're like, yeah, oh my God. And it's just so fun.
So we're very excited to talk about
this. So that's what we do. That's what we do Saturdays on Facebook. We do this.
Yeah. Well, look, ladies, it's been absolutely amazing to talk to you. I'm desperate for people to go and follow you on all the social media. Watch your YouTube videos. You've got some amazing, really, really helpful videos on there about a whole range of things to do with working remotely. I still have to buy all the stuff that you've suggested for all the equipment that you need for making your own films, your own YouTube films. It's on my list. So really, really great resources. And you're in Canada at the moment. Where's next for you after that?
Oh, New Orleans. We're going home for a few months for Christmas.
Yep. It's our first Christmas with family in years. So we're very excited about this.
And then we're thinking maybe Mexico and Spain or Italy. So we're still planning next year.
Yeah, our spreadsheet is full, trust us.
Oh, I need the spreadsheet. Mine is all scribbled on bits of paper. I need the spreadsheet.
I live by it. Yes. It's so helpful because really you forget everything you plan. I do.
Well, thank you so much. Have a great rest of the day, evening. I've got no clue. It doesn't really matter what time it is there for you. Have a fantastic rest of your day. And thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you for having us. This was such a blast. Really, thank you.
We love all your social media too. We'll continue stalking you.
Likewise. I'll stalk you too.
Yay. Bye.
Oh, there were so many things I enjoyed about talking to those two. Just normalizing some of my experiences was great. It's not all long legs and toned abs lying around on a campervan bed in perfect lighting for a selfie. It's real life with supermarkets and arguments about the washing up and picking up dog poo from the back garden. But you're doing all those things in another country, which does make it a little bit more fun. Do check them out. The links to all their social media, including their brilliant Facebook page and their YouTube channel, are in the notes for this episode. And of course, please stay in touch with us here at A Brilliant Gamble. With information about how to do that, here's the lovely Ivy Palmer.
To hear from you, you can get all the episodes of this show plus read the blog and find out more about our travel adventure at www.brilliantgamble.com. Sign up to the newsletter and get an advance notice of the classes and programs Mummy is running. Plus, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Brilliant Gamble. Finally, please leave a review and star rating for this podcast on iTunes, as it helps people find us and take a brilliant gamble of their own.